perception of this country, and it just continues to evolve and take a different name and role. I think what's the most disturbing out of all of this, it's the impunity rate and how the judicial system has been set in place to hold people accountable, and that people are supposed to be innocent and to proven guilty, and yet we see people that have a weapon and a badge, and they determine who lives and dies basically under their discretion, with no proper training, with no adequate tools. And this is affecting thousands and thousands of people in the United States.
So, Shield, we have to end here, but we're going to conduct this interview in Spanish as well, and we'll post it at democracynow.org. Yvette Boiso, project manager for La Raza Database Project, and Jesus Garcia, demographer and statistician on the project. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO is community planted, watered, and grown. Our funding is cultivated by listeners like you. We are looking to harvest $55,000 for this fall drive to support our organic, bountiful programming. Take root by becoming a member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give to donate, or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, the U.S. House votes to oust Speaker Kevin McCarthy, leaving the powerful position vacant. Washington State's minimum wage will increase to $16.28 next year. And expect an emergency alert tomorrow. FEMA is running a nationwide test. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. The United States House of Representatives votes to oust Kevin McCarthy as Speaker. The vote was earlier this afternoon. It's a historic one. No House Speaker has ever been removed through a resolution passing to remove them. This comes just days after McCarthy secured a last-minute bipartisan spending deal to avert a government shutdown over the weekend. The vote was called for by the far right wing of the Republican Party after McCarthy agreed to a rule that just one representative could call for a vote to oust him from the position. It's a deal he made with the far-right lawmakers to get the position in the first place. The resolution passed 216-210, with 8 Republicans joining Democratic lawmakers to kick out McCarthy. Now the House will need to elect a new speaker, but there isn't a clear alternative candidate who would have enough support. House Rules Chairman and Republican Tom Cole told CNN, quote, "Nobody knows what's going to happen next, including all the people that voted to vacate. It's simply a vote for chaos," end quote. Representative Patrick McHenry of North Carolina is the interim speaker, or speaker pro tempore. He can only send the House to recess, adjourn the chamber, and recognize speaker nominations. The House GOP will have a conference meeting later this evening, but no speaker election votes are expected tonight. Washington State's minimum wage will increase to $16.28 an hour, starting at the beginning of 2024. That's a 54-cent increase from the current base wage. It's the highest minimum wage of any state in the nation, and it's more than double the federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. It's been stuck at that floor since 2009. By comparison, Oregon's statewide minimum wage is $14.20, and it varies some by metro and non-urban counties. Seattle, SeaTac, and Tukwila also have higher minimum wages than the base level, between $18 and $19 an hour. The adjustment in Washington is based on the federal estimates of price increases. The Consumer Price Index shows a rising cost of housing, food, and medical care, around 3.3%. The Washington State Department of Labor and Industries also calculated new minimum wage salaries for managers and other employees who are exempt from overtime rules. Also starting in January 2024, minimum pay rules for rideshare drivers. Drivers will earn a minimum amount per passenger minute and passenger mile. The rate varies for trips inside and outside of Seattle, but it ensures that rideshare drivers are more fairly compensated for their work, which up until now was entirely up to rideshare companies. A new report on long-term care across the country ranks Oregon at number 7. That's a drop from number 4 in 2020 for the state. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Oregon ranks in the top 10 in a recent analysis of long-term care systems across the country. The state comes in 7th on AARP's Long-Term Services and Supports State Scorecard. That's a drop from 4th in the last scorecard in 2020. Despite the drop, AARP Oregon State Director Bandana Shrestha says the state is doing well in some areas.
We are doing really well on one of the dimensions, which is support for family caregivers. And there are some policies in place that Oregon has, like the paid family leave law and the paid sick leave laws, which help that ranking that we've gotten.
Oregon ranks 4th in the category of support for family caregivers. It struggled most in affordability and access at number 25. Shrestha notes there are other troubling signs, such as the state's ranking at 50th in the nation for its supply of adult day services.
That's alarming. That means that we don't have supports in community where family caregivers may be able to take that loved one and where somebody can get support during the day when somebody has to go to work, the family caregiver has to go to work.
Shrestha says family caregivers are the backbone of the long-term care system. She says Oregon does well in this category, but it's important for states across the country to focus on this work.
How can we continue to support family caregivers and do better by them is something that we need to think about.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
On Wednesday afternoon, the federal government will conduct a nationwide test of the emergency alert system. The messages will show up on cell phones, TVs, and radios. The test is to help prepare for actual emergencies, to make sure the messaging system works well in the event Americans are threatened by natural disasters, terrorism, or other dangers. It's the same system that sends out National Weather Service alerts and Amber Alerts. It will begin around 11:20 a.m. on Wednesday, October 4th. The testing window runs for 30 minutes, and it doesn't require you to take any action. In the event that an emergency actually does happen at that time, the test alert will be sent out next week instead. A proposed Southern Oregon wildlife crossing over I-5 would be the first of its kind involving that very busy freeway. State transit officials are seeking federal infrastructure funding to build the crossing. The section of road involved, near the Oregon-California border, bridges two sections of federal, relatively wild lands. This has led to a high number of wildlife encounters. A crossing would help keep deer, elk, and other wildlife from being struck by high-speed vehicles. The Oregon Department of Transportation, or ODOT, reported that at least 5 bears and 1 cougar were hit along the stretch from Ashland to the California border. Between 2016 and 2020, more than 100 deer were also struck. That report does not include many smaller animals like raccoons, squirrels, and skunks. A coalition of nonprofit and governmental agencies have long been working to design and build an overpass near the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument. The wildlife overpass would be designed in such a way that animals wouldn't even know they're crossing over a highway, shielded from light, vibration, and traffic views. Fencing would also be installed on either side to guide animals toward the crossing. ODOT is asking for $20 million from a new federal wildlife crossing pilot program, out of the $115 million that is available this year. The agency is currently in the design and engineering phase of the project. ODOT has already received $1.5 million in state funding for the design, which comes from a $7 million fund approved by the state legislature. Along with a wildlife overpass, ODOT is looking at potential places to improve two existing underpasses to create more places for wildlife to cross. The federal funding will likely be announced early next year. If the monies are approved, construction could begin in 2025 or 2026. Donald Trump's civil trial in New York is underway. House Republicans are divided on the ouster of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker, and Latino voter groups are hoping to see a mass turnout in the next election. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is a continuation of the single greatest witch hunt of all time. We have a rogue judge who rules that properties are worth a tiny fraction, 1/100th, a tiny fraction of what they actually are.
Former President Donald Trump says his New York civil trial is election interference. One judge has already found the Trump Organization guilty of perpetuating fraud worth millions by lying about the value of its properties. But several members of the Trump family will be called to testify as the trial on related charges continues. Along with $250 million in damages, New York Attorney General Letitia James wants to bar the Trump Organization from any commercial real estate deals in the state for 5 years. She's also seeking to have Trump blocked from operating any New York companies and stresses that no one is above the law.
No matter how powerful you are, no matter how much money you think you may have, no one is above the law. And it is my responsibility and my duty and my job to enforce it. The law is both powerful and fragile. And today in court, we will prove our case.
Congressional Republicans' infighting has shifted to whether Kevin McCarthy should remain Speaker. Right-wing Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz has filed a long-shot bid to unseat McCarthy in spite of a recent YouGov poll that found less than a third of ordinary people disapprove of the job the Speaker is doing. Gaetz is also breaking with Republican leadership on aid for Ukraine and says he wants more focus on border protection.
But could we at least agree that no matter how you feel about Ukraine or the southern border, they each deserve the dignity of their own consideration and should not be rolled together where they might pass where each individually wouldn't? This is what we're trying to get away from.
California Republican Tom McClintock says Gaetz's motion to vacate is counterproductive and damaging for the party's ability to run the House.
The immediate effect will be to paralyze the House indefinitely because no other business can be taken up until a replacement is elected. Just when we are on the verge of completing the appropriations process that in turn will finally initiate discussions with the Senate that are vital to change the dangerous path that our country is on.
Arizona played a key role in the last two federal elections, and experts see that trend continuing. Organizers say younger Latino voters helped flip the state from red to blue in 2020 by just 12,000 votes. Arizona State Representative Alma Hernandez says that margin is only going to grow as long as it's cultivated.
We need to do better as a community to really do what we can to lay that groundwork early on, not doing this 3 weeks before the election, right? The investment is what is so important, and that's how we really change the policies.
The head of Microsoft testified for the government in a landmark antitrust case against Google. During 3.5 hours of testimony in a packed Washington courtroom, Microsoft's CEO described the internet as the Google web, where it is nearly impossible to compete. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during the program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Totality of Circumstances, following local police reform and action with KBOO's Jasmine Moneymaker and Sam Bowman. At 6 o'clock, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy with a low of 54 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 67. Today in history, in 1949, WERD opens in Atlanta, the first black-owned radio station in the United States. The quote of the day is from American writer Gore Vidal, who was born this day in 1925. He said, quote, "At any given moment, public opinion is a chaos of superstition, misinformation, and prejudice." Indigenous protesters in Guatemala are rallying against what they're calling a coup in progress. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In the ongoing election turmoil in Guatemala, thousands of indigenous groups came out to protest and block highways. This was in response to actions over the weekend by the country's Justice Department to confiscate dozens of containers of voting material. Protesters say it's an effort to use the judicial system to block a president-elect seeking reform from taking office. Maria Martin reports.
They held up traffic in at least eight important crossroads in Guatemala. Thousands of indigenous protesters blocked highways to defend democracy and fight against what reformist president-elect Bernardo Arevalo calls a, quote, coup in process.
Los corruptos ya el país les ha dicho.
At another protest in Guatemala City, indigenous leader Rosa Castro said Maya and all Guatemalans are tired of the corrupt rule by inept rulers who rob people of decent health and education, making millions in private profit during the pandemic, and her now trying to pass legislation that would harm Maya communities, including an amnesty for war crimes committed during Guatemala's 36 years of civil conflict. The protest are calling for the resignation of the Attorney General and others involved in what one electoral magistrate called nothing short of an assault on democracy. The influential Maya group, 48 Cantones, 48 Villages, says they're prepared to blockade indefinitely. For National Native News, I'm Maria Martin.
The federal government is taking new steps to preserve the oral history of Native American boarding schools that were run by governments and churches. The Mountain West News Bureau's Kayla Bradel has more.
For more than 150 years, hundreds of thousands of Native American children were forced to attend boarding schools created to strip them of their culture. Their hair was cut off, traditional clothes were burned, and many were beaten. Now, the government is giving nearly $4 million to a coalition focused on boarding school healing. The group will create a collection of survivor stories, testimonies that tribal governments, policymakers, and the public can access. The group also wants Congress to establish a commission to investigate and document the past injustices of boarding school policies. Congresswoman Charisse Davids of Kansas is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation. She spoke about that proposal in a recent webinar.
We are in a time where we can make sure that this legacy, this history, this the full truth of these policies is not just acknowledged, but that we do something to start to address that chapter of our legacy.
So far, the commission bill has not passed either chamber in Congress. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Three Democratic U.S. lawmakers have introduced legislation to officially recognize the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day on the federal level. U.S. New Mexico Senators Martin Heinrich and Ben Ray Lujan and California Congresswoman Norma Torres introduced the bill. The bill would also replace any mention of Columbus Day in all federal laws or regulations with Indigenous Peoples Day. According to the lawmakers, more than a dozen states across the country have already made the change, including New Mexico. The lawmakers say recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day as a federal holiday is a step to address generations of trauma and inequity. Tribal leaders and executive officers of Native organizations are among those supporting the bill. In the Senate, the bill is co-sponsored by 11 Democratic senators who often advocate for Native issues, including members of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The Environmental Protection Agency has proposed clean car standards, and climate change groups are pressing the agency to issue final rules. Transportation is responsible for nearly a third of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. Suzanne Potter reports.
Local officials concerned about climate change are speaking out, urging the EPA to finalize its proposed clean car standards. The agency aims to ensure that 67% of new light-duty vehicles and 25% of new heavy-duty trucks sold in the U.S. are electric by 2032. New York Assemblymember Angelo Santabarbara says the clean car standards are crucial to achieving our climate goals.
These standards represent a pivotal step towards accelerating the transition to electric vehicles. They are essential to stabilizing our climate and safeguarding public health.
Transportation is responsible for 27% of total greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S., more than any other sector. Vehicle emission pollution is believed to lead to up to 200,000 premature deaths per year nationwide. Opponents of the clean car standards say they could add to the cost of vehicles. Supporters counter that EVs save consumers big bucks at the gas pump. Alex Walker Griffin is mayor of the Bay Area town of Hercules. He applauds California's commitment to ban the sale of cars with combustion engines by 2035 and its incentives that make electric vehicles more affordable.
We have to keep equity and working class folks in mind by establishing more tax credits to make sure that these electric vehicles are available so that when we make this transition, we're not leaving out the black and brown communities that have historically been impacted by some of these decisions.
New Mexico State Representative Debbie Sarignana says the science on climate change is real and urgent.
Greenhouse gas emissions are having a devastating impact on the environment and ecosystem we depend on. We see effects worldwide, longer, hotter summer temperatures, and forest fires of record size and number devastating homes, businesses, and land across our state.
Advocates argue that the transition to clean cars will reduce our dependence on foreign oil. They also assert that drought, floods, and extreme heat fueled by climate change are causing instability across the world and thus constitute a threat to our national security. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is proposing to prohibit the reporting of all medical debts on credit reports. Even so, consumer advocates are pushing the agency to do more to stop health providers from using predatory, deferred interest credit cards. Eric Galatas has more in Wyoming.
The 100 million Americans currently carrying medical or dental debt could get some relief after the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau took steps to prohibit credit agencies from including that debt on credit reports. As Julia Char-Gilbert with the Colorado Center on Law and Policy explains, bad credit scores due to medical debt can create big problems.
Families are increasingly facing barriers to accessing rental housing, credit cards, certain forms of employment, all because that medical bill is showing up on their credit report.
The CFPB proposal begins a rulemaking process that will include a call for public comments. Gilbert says 700,000 Coloradans currently saddled with medical debt should see relief sooner. A new Colorado law bans medical debt from Coloradans' credit reports. Critics of the move have argued that employers, landlords, and banks need this information as they calculate their risks. Proponents say excluding medical debt from reports makes the system more fair, since low-income people and people of color are disproportionately burdened by medical bills. Gilbert also points to one CFPB study of 5 million credit records showing that medical debt is not a good predictor of whether or not someone can make rent or repay loans.
And so this change to how we do credit reporting in the United States helps make our credit reporting system more accurate and better at doing what it's intended to do, which is understanding whether a consumer is a good person to extend a loan to.
Under the new Colorado law, Gilbert says it's up to credit agencies to make sure medical debt is not listed on your credit report, but she says if you have an important life event coming up, applying for a job, apartment, credit card, or loan, it's worth double checking.
If your medical debt is still showing up on your credit report and you're a resident of Colorado, that shouldn't be happening under the new law, and you have the right to file what's called a dispute and make sure that that information gets cleaned up.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
Kim Jong-un's visit to Russia and new weapons agreements cemented the Cold War on the Korean Peninsula. Different U.S. policies towards North Korea and China might have avoided this dangerous situation. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Alarm bells are ringing in Tokyo, Seoul, and Washington over Kim Jong-un's transactions during his six-day stay in Vladivostok. He visited a full range of Russian military installations, bases, missile sites, ports, a spaceport. Kim seemed to have a particular interest in space technology, no doubt due to the failure of two recent space launches. From various reports, the transactions will take place in two directions. Russia will probably provide North Korea with missile help, notwithstanding UN sanctions on the North's ballistic missile tests. Russia may also provide food assistance to offset North Korea's always troubled agricultural sector, and it may increase the number of workers it sends to North Korea. North Korea is likely to provide Russia with a variety of weapons, including multiple rocket launchers, artillery shells, sniper rifles, drones, and missiles. It's generally believed that Russia, despite the depth of its military industries, badly needs basic war supplies such as artillery shells, China has been a reluctant supplier, largely leaving the field to Iran and North Korea. Keep in mind, by the way, that South Korea recently agreed to start selling arms to Ukraine, and South Korea has become a major military-industrial partner with Poland, drawing a warning from Putin last year. North Korea suddenly is the darling of Russian and Chinese diplomats. In July, Russia sent its defense minister, Sergei Shoigu, to visit North Korea, the first time since Soviet days that a Russian defense minister had visited North Korea. Following on Kim Jong-un's trip to Vladivostok, China's foreign minister Wang Yi went to North Korea, and Russia's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov did the same. The substance of those visits has not been revealed, but they probably are in response to three developments: the recent trilateral agreement of South Korea, the U.S., and Japan to deepen security cooperation, a new round of meetings of U.S. and South Korean defense officials on deterring North Korea through the recently created nuclear consultation group, and high-level talk in South Korea about developing its own nuclear weapons. Thus, implicit nuclear threats are being made by both Koreas. Consider this report in the South Korean press on a joint U.S.-Republic of Korea statement after a visit by a U.S. Defense Department official. Quote, "The U.S. side reaffirmed its ironclad commitment to the defense of South Korea, leveraging the full range of its military capabilities, and reiterated that any nuclear attack by the North against the U.S. and its allies will result in the end of the Kim regime." Will new North Korean ballistic missile tests or even a long-awaited seventh nuclear test be in the offing? Has the threat from the North risen to a new level? Most U.S. and South Korean analysts seem to think so, but here are some other ideas. Two people with considerable experience dealing with North Korea, Robert Carlin and Siegfried Hecker, go deeper into the Kim visit to Russia. They write that, quote, "It's the result of a fundamental shift in North Korean policy, finally abandoning a 30-year effort to normalize relations with the United States," unquote. Contrary to the conventional view of North Korea, these experts argue that even as Kim invested heavily in nuclear weapons and missiles, he also looked to use them as bargaining chips with the U.S., hoping he could win security assurances as part of normal relations. Kim finally concluded after his dealings with Trump and lack of attention by Biden that normalization wasn't achievable. At that point, he moved closer to Moscow and Beijing. A missed opportunity for the U.S.? Perhaps. And as with U.S. relations with Iran, the war in Ukraine has so absorbed the attention of Washington policymakers that creative diplomacy aimed at keeping nuclear weapons in their silos just isn't receiving attention. Other observers see Kim's visit as posing problems for China. Russia may have gained an advantage over China by becoming the key weapons supplier to Pyongyang. Kim used the occasion to reiterate support of Russia's war on Ukraine, saying, for instance, that Russia would, quote, "win a great victory in the sacred struggle to punish the band of evil that aspires to hegemony and feeds on expansionist illusions," unquote. An expected tribute to Russia, to be sure, but perhaps something more. Greater Russian influence in North Korea might lead to more missile tests by Kim and further tension on the Korean Peninsula. Putin might find that helpful as the Ukraine war moves along, but the Chinese have always been concerned about a crisis on their doorstep precipitated by a North Korean weapons test. Given China's domestic problems and tensions with the U.S. today, a crisis on the Korean Peninsula seems particularly unwelcome in Beijing. I would have to think that view has been communicated to Kim Jong-un and the Russians more than once. If U.S. relations with China were better, China's cooperation in restraining Kim Jong-un could be counted on. That's not the case, and thus another missed opportunity for lowering tensions. I'm Mel Gertoff for The Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Mel Gertov, Sam Bowman, and Jasmine Moneymaker. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Mike Moen, Eric Tegadoff, Edwin J. Vieira, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join if you would like to become a member. To support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Totality of Circumstances.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. I'm Sam Bowman. This is Totality of Circumstances, a monthly show covering police oversight in Portland. My co-host Jasmine is out of town as of this recording, but for the past couple years we've been following the progress of the Police Accountability Commission as it created a new police accountability system for the city. This progress involved extensive research, holding hearings with politicians, community groups, police, and the general public, creating lengthy documents and reports, and ultimately presenting a suite of city code changes to City Council on Thursday, September 21st. This is a major milestone in the process of creating the new system, which Portlanders voted for overwhelmingly in 2020. Many members of the City Council have questioned whether or not the will of Portland voters has changed, however, whether they really want so much money and energy spent on police accountability. So, it's worth reminding ourselves how the accountability system came up for a vote in the first place. Beginning in late May of 2020, Portland saw months of ongoing protests against racism and police brutality stemming from the murder of George Floyd, often featuring violent responses from the Portland Police Bureau and other state, local, and federal law enforcement agencies. Myriad accountability issues came out of the protests, from the use and effects of police chemical munitions to riot